And so God, help us now as we gathered here to worship you, to find rest in you and rest in spirit and soul as we renew through your refreshing waters of love. That when we depart from this place, we will be sunlight rays in the world. For we will know that we are loved and we go forward to share love. Speak to us through your word. Allow us, O God, your spirit, that we may hear and receive. For we pray it in Christ's holy name. Amen. So this past week, I was in Barnes & Noble on Friday, and I was in the checkout line, and I overheard a conversation behind me, and there was two ladies, and one said, "Here's that 50 Shades of Grey. That's the book that everybody's reading." And the other one said, "Oh, come on, you don't want that mess." And so I kind of looked over my shoulder, and then I began to smile, and I began to wonder. I said, "Well, I wonder if they knew that romantic language was in the Bible. I wonder if they've ever heard that." You see, a few minutes earlier, I had been over in that section of Barnes & Noble, and I had opened the book, and yes, I stood there and read the first chapter. And so I know that in the first chapter, the setting is that, you know, Mrs. Steele stumbles into Mr. Gray's office. And as she begins to describe the encounter, she talks about how attracted he is, how well-dressed, and how she kind of was fumbling for her voice. And so you begin, okay, yes, this is attraction. And if you read the rest of the first chapter, you find out that it's mutual. And so since I live in America, it's like, okay, I know where this is going. Because in America, you know, this is a, you know, fictional best-selling book, right? And so in America, in our time, everything is about seduction and consummation of relationships, even though there's no commitment. And after all, I mean, a couple of years ago, the phrase was very popular, friends with benefit. So you're too young, but in my day, there was this question, and it was, why buy the cow? Oh, you know that. So, given the popularity of 50 Shades of Grey in pop culture, perhaps it is a good time that we take a look at the romantic language in the Bible. Psalms of Solomon is a great selection of love poetry. Between, as the part we're dealing with today, is the part where is love language between two lovers who have not consummated the relationship. So the Song of Solomon begins with words, and if you read them right off, you're like, what? This is in the Bible? I mean, you know, notice the lectionary didn't start with verse 1. It started in the middle of chapter 2. Because the very first sentence in the Songs of Solomon says, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. What? This is in the Bible? What? We're not talking about modern day time. We're talking about ancient time when women and men were, you know, they couldn't even touch, and especially not in public. And what? In ancient time where fathers was always warning their sons, especially if you've ever read Proverbs, stay away from loose women. And so this song, this portrait began with this lady. She's apologizing a little bit for her look. She said, well, I'm dark skinned. Don't look at me because I'm black. And then she goes on and said, oh, okay, but look, even though I'm black, I'm the Rose of Sharon, the Lily of the Valley. In other words, as Maya Angelou would say, I'm a phenomenal woman. She said, I got it going on. And see, her lover, he agreed. He said, she is a lily among the bramble. But you know, the thorny, like the blackberry and around those bushes. She's a lily. And she thought he was gorgeous too. She says, he's like an apple tree in the forest. He's sweet. I love being under his shadow. Now see, some of you can remember those days when you first fell in love. You can remember how you could never get that person off your mind, and it didn't matter if they were 100 miles away or 1,000 miles away. You just wanted to be in their presence, and even if you got there and couldn't stay long, it was just catching up with them for a few minutes. And you remember how you were on the phone even though you really didn't have anything to say? You remember, so of course, now it's text messaging. I just think it doesn't have the beauty of when you're writing those letters. See, I remember getting a letter when I was in the fourth grade. And the little boy, he sent me 6 cents in the letter so I could write him back. But my uncles discovered that I had a letter, and they told my mom, and she said, you could just give me that 6 cents. But you remember. And of course, when he got back to school that next year, he says, why didn't you write me back? Well, I couldn't. But we remember. And so I'm convinced that when people fall in love, they just lose it. I'm convinced that you just kind of lose your mind. That why else would you get married? You lose your mind. And so I think this young lady, she sees that too, because she gives a warning before we get to that part. She gives a warning. She says, oh, daughters of Jerusalem, do not awaken love until it's ready. And she says, look, I see my lover come. I hear his voice. I see him coming over the mountains and over the hills. He's like a gazelle. That's not how we would describe. So she's saying he's attractive. He's agile. He's strong. He's swift. He's like Michael Phelps in the swimming pool. Or Lance Armstrong as he's riding his bikes through the hills of Italy. I see him coming. Look, he's at my door, he's at my window, and he's calling out to me. He says, arise, my love, my fair one, and come away with me. I'm paraphrasing. He says, the winter is gone, the rains have ceased, spring is in the air. The landscape is beautiful with their blossom, the blue bonnets are in bloom. The grass has sprouted up. It's all green. The fragrance of spring is all in the air. Come away with me so we can go and hide in the cleft of the rocks so that we can be alone. You know, that's what it's about when you're in love. You want to be alone, right, with that person. Come and be with me. Spring is in the air. You know, there's something about springtime. Springtime elevates our senses. And if you have allergies and live in Central Texas, you just really know what that's like. Your sense of smell, your sense of sight, your sense of sound, you just pay attention to everything that's happened in nature. And when you're in love, every day is like springtime. You're like you're walking on clouds. So when I was growing up, we knew it was going to happen every spring. We never knew when, but you knew it was going to happen. And usually there was an incident that sparked it happening, like the principal seeing two young people somewhere at the foyer in the campus a little bit too close. So he would call a meeting. He would get on intercom. He says, all girls between the ages of from the 7th grade to the 12th grade, report to the gymnasium. All boys from 7th to 12th grade, report to the cafeteria. And in the gymnasium, Ms. Dugan and all the female teachers would meet. And in the cafeteria, Mr. Junis and all the male teachers would meet. And they would have a conversation with us. Today, we say about the birds and bees, they would call it the facts of life. And in about an hour or so, all the boys would join us in the gym. And then the principal would come, and he would take center stage, and he would open up the Bible to the 3rd chapter of Ecclesiastes. For every time, everything, there is a season. And we knew what was coming next. You read the whole part of Ecclesiastes all the way through the 8 verses. And then he says, you know, he'd close the book. And then after that, we didn't know what was going to come next. Either he was going to call somebody out or send somebody home. We didn't know. Or call you forward and make you stand in the front of everybody. We never knew, so you're holding your breath. Even though you knew you hadn't done anything. And then he would go back and recount the rules. There is no holding hands until after the first year of dating. And if that first year is not your senior year, there's no holding hand. There's no holding hand until your senior year of high school. And then we knew that he would say, there's no being alone in secluded places. And girls, if you go on a date, you must take enough money to get a cab home or pay for another way to go home. And if your parents can't give you that money, call me. And then he would reach into his back pocket and pull out his wallet and open it to show us that he was a deputy sheriff. And he would say to the boys, all these girls are my daughters. You are my children. And then he'd go back to the Bible, flip open to Ecclesiastes again. A time for everything under the sun. And as long as you're in my school, your season of love has not come. Miss the Caldwell and his rules. I understand that in 50 Shades of Grey, there are rules, but those rules do not have anything to do with love. There's another little twist. It's not in the part that we read this morning, but I hope you go home and you'll read the rest of the story. A little twist in there, and then she talks about the foxes. She talks about the foxes that come in and destroy the vineyard, and so scholars have a problem with that. It's like, well, you know, what does she mean by this? Because, you know, foxes are destruction, so it's pointing to some problems in the relationship, one set of scholars says in. And so what she's telling the young lover, you need to fix these problems, and there's a problem with selfishness and distrust, problem with jealousy, because those are things that destroy relationship. And another scholar says, no, I don't think that's what it is. I think what it is, because foxes are clever and they're sly. So I think it's them writing in code about how they're going to sneak away and be alone so they can consummate the relationship. And so, you know, given my culture and given the background I grew up in, the song of Slipping in the Darkness, I'm kind of prone to go with the second one, you know, because it's about how you can get away with something without getting caught. Well, you know, when you go and read the rest of the story, this couple that is dancing with the love language of commitment and trying to consummate the relationship and trying to figure things out and what does the future hold? So when you read the rest of the story, particularly chapter 4, you know, because I'm, you know, I like things, can't be in suspense too long. So they figure out, they get married, the relationship is consummated. And then in chapter 8, there's this little poem part I really like. It says, set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is strong as death. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can floods drown it. Now, the church is often silent when it comes to eros, the erotical nature of love. It is, in fact, we act as if it does not exist. The opening verses of the Song of Solomon, according to biblical scholar Renita Reem, forces the reader to face his or her deepest conviction about marriage, love, and female sexuality. See, here's the deal. We celebrate that in the creation story, God created male and female in God's image, and God blessed them saying, be. We celebrate it. And then there's the second account of creation, the one I grew up with, where God creates man, and then God takes, you know, and the rib out of, and I think we got that because that was all about submission, right? However, even in that story, God creates because God said it's not good that man be alone. And we say that everything God created is good. So this is conversation we should be having in the church. about human sexuality. Because everything that's good can also be turned into something bad. Perhaps that's why Paul, in his letter to the Thessalonians, writes, "For this is the will of God, that each of you know how to control your own body in holiness and honor, not with lustful passion, like the Gentiles who do not know God, that no one wrong or exploit a brother or a sister in this matter. God did not call us into impurity, but in holiness." Now, time will not permit me to go into all the ways in our world where there is sexual exploitation. It happens in all areas of society, in all walks of life. This past week in Lampasas, a coach from Lampasas was arrested for improper relationship with a student. On Friday, a man in Mali received 100 lashes for rape. That was a light sentence because if the woman, his accuser, had been married, he would have been stoned to death. I celebrate the opening of fall football season. But as we open this season, there's a legendary football program that's under a dark cloud. The church itself is not immune to exploitation from the pulpit to the pew. We have places that have gone bankrupt because of lawsuit, because of improper relationship. What God created as good has been turned into something destructive and unholy, something that does not honor God. This is why the church must not leave conversation of human sexuality to talk show hosts and book writers. You know, I think if we would talk more about the Song of Solomon, maybe we wouldn't have Jerry Springer. I'm just saying. My brother-in-law, and you know, he's a good Baptist, and they did a Bible study on Songs of Solomon, and when they were promoting, they said, for married couples only. Do you know they got into argument because the unmarried people said, well, we want to be in that Bible study. And the married women was like, oh, no, you can't be in this Bible study. And I said, you know, how cool is that? Having people fighting want to get into something that's in the Bible because they didn't know it was in the Bible in the first place. But here's the other thing. We must talk about it because all relationship must go the full circle of the Greek definitions of love. So here's the deal. The Greek have four different words for love. Agape, that's the unconditional love. We know that one. We celebrate that. We talk about that all the time at church, right? Unconditional, because that's God's love for us. It is the love that seeks the highest value of another. Then there's eros, the passionate love, the sensual desire, the longing. This young lady was longing to see her lover. They're longing to be together. Philia, which means friendship or affectionate love in Greek. And then there's storge, which is also an affectionate love. And it describes the state of relationship as in your family. Here's the deal. If you always stay at that point of that little thing that, you know, oh, I like the way he look, the way he combs his hair. If you don't move past that, your relationship is doomed. You really have to become friends. You have to move to that place where you're seeking the highest being of the other, the highest good of the other. Relationships have to come full circle. That we may come into that commitment of living in the fullness of the covenant union. And perhaps that's why even in the Songs of Solomon, we are pointed toward God. God's name is never mentioned, but the psalm, this language, points us toward God. Because it's about that tug and that commitment and that demand and that whole drama that plays out And that what plays out in our relationship with God. We want to always kind of be in control. And love is about letting go. About, I wouldn't use the word compromising. But it's about coming to that place where you're in seeking the highest good of the other person. God used sensual language to talk about the relationship with his people Israel when he calls Hosea. And he says, Hosea, go and marry, not the finest woman you can find, but go and marry a prostitute. Because it's that tug about commitment. Renita Reams says it like this. She says, the Bible is full of stories of people who play hide and seek with God. Intimacy with God and with each other costs. It costs us our time, our energies, our willingness to be present, to remain, to be accountable, to see things through, to come out from hiding. When you're young in love, you want to hide because you want to be alone, but eventually you have to come out from hiding. And so, the story of these two lovers points us toward a deeper relationship with God. And I hope you go home, you finish reading the rest of the story. Now, when I was growing up, you know, like this, we love this love language of Solomon. But there was another way we used to express it, and it was all in this words of a song by the Temptations, if I can find it. Somewhere. Oh. You got a smile so bright, you know you could have been a candle. I'm holding you so tight, you know you could have been a handle. The way you sweep me off my feet, you know you could have been a broom. And then the way you smell so sweet, you know you could have been some perfume. And so that language, and when my mom and dad would find out that you're singing those songs, and then they said, what's his name? And then dad and mama both say, oh, that's your cousin. The language. There's a couple in my last church that I've been telling all morning. I remember it was an Ash Wednesday service, and following that service, he had gone to lock the front doors, and he was coming down the aisle, and they ended up right in the chancel area, and just about the same moment, and he took her in his arm, and he kissed her on his forehead, and his eyes teared up, and then after he let go, he looked at me and he said, you never know how many of these you're going to get. You never know how many of these you're going to get. Like, you never know how long you're going to be around. So it's celebrating this gift of love at all time. So, you know, the only time you kiss your bride should not be on your wedding day. Long before there was 50 Shades of Grey, there were the Song of Solomon. Because they celebrate the God who created us in God's image. The God who created us in God's image, and because God knew that it was not good for us to be alone, that God wanted to celebrate relationship. God is a relationship God. But not only that, they're there because as these young lovers struggle in their relationship, we struggle in our relationship with God, the God who loves us. And it's so easy in relationship not to see them through, to just walk away. It's irreconcilable. Let's not go there. That's the society we live in. I was counseling young couples about to get married, and they said, the bride-to-be said, well, you know, I'm 30 years old, and my plans in life was to be married by 30, so I figure I'll go ahead and try. If it don't work, you know, it's like, what? That's when you send them to somebody else because you know that it's above your expertise. And so, relationships. God created us for a relationship. Our God is a relationship God. Discover that language in your faith that helps you celebrate and talk about love. If he's the cocoa in your Cocoa Puff, tell him. Somebody, as it was on their way out of the 9:30 service, said, I told him this morning, he's a raisin in my raisin bran. No, oatmeal. Because she said, because if oatmeal didn't have raisin, I wouldn't eat it. If she's a sunrise on your ocean, tell her. Tell her. If there's other people interfering in your relationship, get them out. My mom and dad always help me and say, well, that's your cousin. And even though mom and dad is gone, I got my uncles now. Because we're going to tell you this and don't tell nobody. So this summer when I was home, said I have this friend. And so my uncle came, he said, now, is this serious? And I said, well, you know, we've known each other for years. He said, is this serious? Let me just say to you, I know you're a preacher, but I don't know what he is. So the same uncles that watched over me in high school, you know, even though I'm just fully grown, all those same rules, they still got them. I know. But God created us for relationship. Loving relationship. Not to exploit one another, but to elevate one another. To be committed to one another. And so, discover the language of Solomon. Discover your own love language. And celebrate. Because if you can be committed, comfortable in your commitment to one another, guess what? It will help you in your commitment to God. So what language are you speaking? In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.